This is Sportsnet Today with Logan Gordon on your official home of the Flames, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, let's get it going. Happy Thursday. It is another Calgary Flames game day from the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. Your Calgary Flames versus the Montreal Canadiens. Game two of this five-game road trip as the Calgary Flames look to win their second game in a row. It's Logan Gordon along with you. This is Sportsnet Today here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We're coming at you live from the Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio in chilly Calgary, Alberta, Canada. I'm Logan. Jordan the Web Guy's here. Cam and Taylor are over there. Laughing it up, hamming it up, enjoying life. Talking all things Sean Monahan. Talking all things Dan Vladar.
Topic of the day, Jonathan Monathan.
It's all they want to talk about. Well, I'm sure we'll talk about it on the show plenty coming up. We'll chat with our Flames insider, Peter Labardius, the color voice of the Calgary Flames, will join us in just moments here on Sportsnet 960. And then just after 2:30, our regular Thursday chat from MLB and NHL Network, Adnan Virk. So stick around for that. But yes, it is a game day. It's going to be a very emotional one tonight at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. Always fun when Montreal comes to town. So let's chat about it with our Flames insider. He is Peter Labardius, and he's brought to you by the Gemini Group Home Renovations. Your home renovation should be a reflection of who you are. Give your home the Gemini difference. The Gemini Group now offering Air Miles Reward Miles. Visit thegeminigroup.ca. Good afternoon, Mr. Labardius. How are you, sir?
I am fine. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. I'm very excited for tonight's matchup, not just the return of Sean Monahan, but the one and only visit that the Montreal Canadiens make to Calgary, and it's always fun when we get an original six team here at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome.
Yeah, you know what, Logan, for me, part of when Montreal comes to town is, needless to say, you know, when Montreal and Toronto come here, the atmosphere is different, and it's fun, and, you know, I personally wish they could come more often than just once, but even... to be honest, from, you know, a media perspective, you know, Montreal, it's just different. And, you know, they travel, a lot of people, and it creates even a bigger game type feel for me just when they're here on that note, too. So it's very different. It's fun. It's, you know, I really enjoy in many ways, you know, watching how they go about their jobs. Now I'm getting feedback. But yeah, it's fun, and I always enjoy the daylights out of it.
The Montreal Canadiens coming into tonight 11-10-1 for Martin St. Louis Group. Currently sixth in the Atlantic Division, 6-4 in their last 10, but coming off a loss in their last outing. We'll dive into some of the particulars on the Montreal side of things, Lou, but for the second game in a row, a very key piece of the last couple of years that really defined the Calgary Flames for a long time will return to the Saddle Dome tonight, and that's in Sean Monahan. He spoke to the media ahead of tonight's game, and it's pretty easy to tell. It's a short clip from Sean, you know, asked about what his message would be to the city and to the people of Calgary, the fans that followed him for so long. And pretty easy to tell that this is going to be a very emotional one for Sean Monahan tonight.
Yeah, no, just thank you. I mean, supported me from day one, came in 18 years old, and yeah, it's a special place, and really enjoyed my time here.
It's very different today than, you know, hearing from Matthew the other day. And because it is different, you know, this is a guy who had a good couple years in junior and somewhat surprised us, you know, making the team in what was really his 19-year-old year, but started at 18 because he has an October the 12th birthday. You know, got off to a great start, became a, you know, a perennial 20-goal guy, hit 30 a couple of times, scored more than 200 goals as a member of the Calgary Flames. But there's a couple of things that always resonated and why this is a different one for me tonight than it was the other day. And it's because Sean gave this organization, Logan, everything that he had. And he played hurt a lot, probably more than he should have. He truly just wanted and did everything he could to help try and make this team the best that it can be. And he never had any excuses. He never dodged any tough questions. He owned everything that he was a part of on the right side, on the wrong side. He went through a very difficult stretch here by the end when he just frankly wasn't healthy enough to play well. I'm so happy that, you know, the second hip got redone and he's feeling better than he has and he's moving better than he has in the last few years, because he went through a lot and he did it with grace and dignity and professionalism and class. So I'm a really big fan of Sean, and I'm delighted. And you could tell in that clip that what it meant. And, you know, even if he had never experienced this before, you know, Sean's from Brampton. He went away, you know, to play junior hockey in Ottawa. But, you know, when you start a job at 18 years old and you spend that amount of time here, you know, it's a special time. You grow up here. I say the same thing about my first 4 years in the business in Estevan, Saskatchewan. It kind of lays the groundwork for everything that you do. And you could see that, you could hear it, and it was just nice to have a quick hello with him today. And I hope he has a great night. And, you know, he's off to a nice start this year with 14 points. So good for him. And I just wanted to share this, and I'll ask you the same question. And one of my favorite Sean Monahan memories, because I think it says a lot about him. Yes, I remember great nights and his first goal and all those neat little milestones, you know, being part of that 2014-2015 group that got its way into the playoffs. But you know what my favorite Sean Monahan moment is? It came last spring. And it was looking down from the press box after Johnny Gaudreau had scored the Game 7 overtime winner. And there was Sean there in the hallway to meet him and give him a great big hug. That image will last with me for the rest of my life. It's actually one of my two or three favorite moments of being around the Calgary Flames.
Yeah, I think that one will be near the top for everybody thinking about their favorite Sean Monahan moment, because he was still part of the team and still, you know, fighting through everything. He still wanted to be there, and it's got to be so hard to sit and watch your teammates in those situations. But he was as good a teammate as anybody. And Lou, you talk about you know, being such a big fan of him. Turns out the head coach is a pretty big fan of him, too. He spoke about Sean Monahan yesterday. It's a little bit of a longer clip, but stay with it here and really listen into what Daryl has to say, reflecting back on Sean Monahan's time at the Calgary Flames.
I'm going to tell you this about Monty, and the guys that were here that always asked about Sean. You know, Sean did everything you asked him to. Like, if you could have, if Sean had been on one of those guys that was on a long-term thing, that's a captain, right? Sean Monahan. And I never seen Sean at his best because he had double hip surgery. You think about it, he had one side, and so he's playing on one there, and then last year he has the other one, right? So he probably played parts of 2 years with major issues. So you never seen him at, but he always, Sean Monahan is such a coachable guy and such a good guy. Like, so to just to see, you know, I haven't watched Montreal much other than knowing that they're coming up and sort of highlights things like that. But I can tell you right now, he's moving a lot better than any time than when in the last 2 years, for sure. So good for him.
Yeah, well said. And that's very high praise, and he deserves every word of it. Every single word of it.
100%. I think there's fair conversations to be had about what the reception was going to be for Matthew coming back on Tuesday, and we'll have it again in January when Johnny comes back. This is a home run slam dunk one for me tonight, Lou, and I don't even have to ask the question because I know the fans here in Calgary. I've read it on social media. I've read it on the text line. I know that they're looking forward to welcoming Sean back as much as Sean is excited to come back, and I'm really excited for that moment tonight at the Scotiabank Saddledome. Flames and Habs go at 7 o'clock tonight right here on Sportsnet 960. Peter Labardius will be on the color side of things, as he always is here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Talked a lot about Sean there to start things off, and deservedly so, Lou, but let's look at the Calgary Flames tonight. Coming off that big win against Florida to kick off this road trip, and the big question heading into tonight was goaltending. Dan Vladar got his second straight start in that win against Florida, played well, but today the decision to go back to Jacob Markstrom against the Montreal Canadiens. Your thoughts on the coaching staff going back to number 25 tonight?
Well, I had a chance to deal with it yesterday in our hit, and had a chance to deal with that question on the post-game show. And the first thing I think I brought up with you, and I know I brought it up this way when it was originally asked, was did Dan Vladar play well enough to continue to play? Yes. But did I really wonder, understanding how important Jacob is to this team and where he needs to be and where he needs to get to in order for this team to accomplish its goals, it wouldn't surprise me if he was the guy tonight. And as it turned out, that was the first thing that ran through my mind after the game on Tuesday. And it was the first thing that went through my mind. I don't always get it right, and I'm the first to admit it. And goaltending guesses can be just that. But that one was like, my gut said Markstrom. And it said Markstrom for all the reasons that I just laid out again. His importance, where you're trying to get to, a little more difficult because, you know, you need points, but you need him to get back to a really high level too. So I'm not surprised. I'm going to guess, and I will ask you this, probably not the most popular decision on the text line today.
It's not. It's.
I didn't think it would be, and I'm not being critical when I say that. So anybody listening, don't take what I just said the wrong way. I get it. I absolutely get it, and I that was what my gut said. But if I had gone to the rink today and saw something different, that wouldn't have surprised me either.
Yeah, and I think this is just part of the coaches show that it goes on every single Flames broadcast with Lou. You hear them all the time on the Flames pregame show. Talking to Daryl Sutter about getting Jacob back to that place where he feels like he's in a rhythm and he's going well is really a big part of this decision. You'll hear this in its entirety later on during the Flames pregame show, but here's Daryl with Lou earlier today talking about that decision to go to Jacob tonight.
We need him to get in sync again, and I think he will. I think he said, we gave him 2 full days off and 3 full practices. So, you know what? There's never a problem attitude-wise with Marky. It's just getting the detail back again.
There it is in a nutshell.
Yeah, hard and that to.
That was my inkling of, where Daryl's head might be with it. But in this case, that's how it's going to go. And I can only imagine what the post-game show will sound like if he doesn't have a great night and the team doesn't win the game. But you may not, let's put it this way, Logan, and I'm glad that I have this opportunity to say this. So, when I do this hit on a daily basis, my number one thing in how I feel about what I do on the radio station is I don't always feel like it's my job to say what I would do. I just always want to try and take people inside to why. I think a lot of people can answer what. I like to try, whether fans agree with it, whether I agree with it, don't agree with it, but I always look at it more from a team perspective and a coaching perspective in terms of how I analyze how and why things get done.
Yeah, and hey, it's one of the things I appreciate about our conversations, Lou, and it's, taking a different view at it sometimes is important, especially when we talk about all the time. I mean, you and me have the conversation about it. It feels like every day that, we go through these processes all the time of one game and, analyzing it like it's an entire season, and it's not. It's a microcosm of an 82-game season, but we love hockey, and we can't get enough of it in this market, so we talk about it, in every way, shape, and form that we possibly can. So it's good sometimes to take it from a different spin and ask some of the different questions, because you can regurgitate a lot of the same things over and over again if you get stuck in that pattern.
Well, we don't have sports radio and our station and our jobs without a very passionate fan base about this hockey team. And needless to say, I'm pretty passionate about this hockey team myself. But in our business sometimes, and I have no trouble saying this, and I'm going to say it right now, I want to try and provide something that isn't derived from strictly the standpoint of a fan. Because after all the years I have covered the game and spent around the game watching it, and more importantly, learning from people who know more about it than I do, I want people to come and listen to this hit because it's not just a fan. It's somebody who doesn't have all the answers. If I did, I probably wouldn't be on the air right now with you at 2:20 in the afternoon. But come from a pretty educated place, and I don't look at it through a fan's lens. I really do try to look at it through a hockey and coaches and management lens.
Just a couple more for you, Lou, before I let you go here on this Thursday and get set to see at the Saddle Dome in a couple hours. But talk to me about what you want to see the group continue from that game against Florida, because we talked about it not being the perfect effort, and there's still room for them to clean things up despite what the final score was. So what do you want to see this group take from that Florida game and continue into tonight?
Well, I'd love nothing more than to see, you know, Andrew Mongiapane and Dylan Dubé, along with Nazem Kadri, to get on a roll. I really think, and I haven't mentioned this the last couple of days, now, a different game again for Jonathan Huberto, because the amount of French media in town who were around him today like, you know, a bee who hasn't seen honey in a long time. So again, it's a bit of a different night for the St. Jerome product. But I just have an inkling, not just because Jonathan had a goal and an assist and, you know, McKenzie, they're both playing much better. I think now that the whole Florida scenario is done, I got a sense that both those guys are going to just feel a little bit more relaxed, a little less pressure, and just continue to go out and be the really good players that they are. And they have been really good players as of late. So I think that's going to be helpful for those two guys.
And last but not least, before we let you go, just wanted to ask, it was questioned by some last year when he took over, but I'm curious how you've seen it from afar. I know we don't always get a chance to watch a team like Montreal as often as we'd like, but Martin St-Louis sure seems to have had a great effect on some of the young up-and-comers in Montreal, and I wonder how many more teams don't go down the road of looking to have someone like that. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that there's a ton of Martin St-Louis out there that are willing to jump in and do what he's done, but I just see the confidence level of Nick Suzuki and Cole Caulfield, Lou, and I can't help but think that Martin St-Louis played a big role in helping those guys get to that level right now.
Well, one of the most interesting things, and I wish we had a little bit more time for this today, and it's usually my fault why we don't have more. But so he was asked a couple of interesting questions, and he's a very smart, thoughtful guy. He really thinks about his answers, and you know, you can tell that he's a very and played that way, so it's not a surprise. One of the neat things he said today was, you know, he was asked about Nick Suzuki's leadership in the room. He was asked about Sean Monahan's impact in their room. And you know what he said, Logan? He said, I really don't know. I don't go in the room. That's their place. So I found that interesting. But the most fascinating part about this conversation, I'll try to be brief, and then Patty and I will get into it on the pregame show tonight too, is, you know, in football, you've got the Jeff Saturday situation going on, and it's kind of similar to when Marty took over last year. But here's what I will say. I'm really mixed, because I think deep down in my heart, if I wasn't a broadcaster, I would have loved to have been a coach. And I've learned so much about this sport and other sports by being around coaches. So the respect I have for that fraternity and the work that goes into it and the grind that goes into trying to coach any sport at the highest level is something that I have beyond respect for. I can't even quantify it properly, and it's one of my favorite things in the world to deal with coaches and get to ask them questions and how do they go about their business. But I think coaching continues to evolve and continues to change. And so on the Marty St. Louis front, especially I think sometimes in this day and age with the demographic of people, where they've come from, I feel really strong about sometimes it's not about the X's and O's, but you have to know the game incredibly well, which needless to say, he does. But how do you reach your people? And how do you lead people? And how do you get their buy-in to get the most out of them? And I just, everything I've watched, witnessed on, off the ice with this guy, he's used all his incredible experience. And I think he is a really fine combination. And he'll make mistakes. He'll make mistakes because all young, even the most gifted people do. But I think because he was such a great player himself and a leader himself and so dialed in and came at the journey from a place of you're never going to get there, I'm not shocked that it's working well. Even though at the time, I wondered as much as anybody.
Lou, you're the best. Always appreciate the time, sir. We'll see you down at the Saddle Dome for the Habs and the Flames later tonight, hey?
Yeah, we're going to have some fun tonight.
Yes, sir. Thanks, looking forward to it. See you, Lou. That's our Flames insider. He's Peter Labardius. He's brought to you by the Gemini Group Home Renovations. Your home renovations should be a reflection of who you are. Give your home the Gemini difference. Visit the GeminiGroup.ca. Now offering Air Miles Reward Miles. Take a break. Come back on the other side. Get you set for our regular Thursday chat with Adnan Virk. He's coming up next. You're on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
You're listening to Sportsnet Today with Logan Gordon on the home of the Flames, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Segment two of Sportsnet Today continues. So Logan Gordon along with you, my grumpy Gen Z millennial do-nothing producers in the other room are grumpy today.
I'm allowed to be grumpy when I get yelled at.
I'm yelling at you?
friendly banter.
It's...
When have I been grumpy today?
In fairness, I should have just said Cam.
That's fair.
Taylor, you're perfectly fine. And I exclude you from my criticism. Cam, you're doing a terrible job. And I'm really going to need you to have an attitude shift here, okay?
Okay, ouch.
Got like 20 minutes to go here. And I'm going to need you to bring some energy, all right?
Lock it in. Look alive.
No more arguing, none of this. It is Thursday, and speaking of guys that I know must have endless trouble with their producers, we go down the Atlas Pizza. That's the worst transition ever. I don't think Virk has any problem with his producers, but maybe he does. Adnan, how are you, pal?
Never. God's gift to me is my producers and my researchers and my directors. Most importantly, my makeup artists who always somehow take away the ugly and shine me up on TV. I love them all.
They're the best people in the world. We love them. We love Cam. We love Taylor. They're keeping us afloat over there. But yeah, sometimes you just you're like a little family. You spend so much time together, Virk, and you're just like sometimes you it's like a little brother or a little sister thing. I'm like, oh, I'm so sick of seeing you every single day, but you got to get it done. You got to work together.
I would like to say I'm quite the delight here.
Okay, yeah, Taylor's fine. Taylor does a great job.
I'm sure Taylor's great.
Yeah, Taylor does fine. They're all right. They're okay. What's up, Virk? How are you? How are you hanging on this Thursday?
I'm good, buddy. It's awesome just because it's such a great time for sports, as we all know. So it was crazy. Today with the soccer, I said, you know, should I still watch even though Canada's out? And I didn't because I was running around doing some other stuff. And then I see we scored another goal. I'm like, nice. Maybe Davies scored. So I'm looking up,
And I just see own goal. And I'm like, huh. Now, does that count? Like, I know it counts. Canada scored two goals. But, like, should we wave in the flag here and go, hey, in 86, we went 0-3, failed to score a goal. This time we went 0-3, but scored two goals. Or is this more like a goal and a half? Like, how do you look at it?
Well, I think, and I might be wrong on this, and the text line will correct me if I am, but I don't think Adekubi gets credit for a goal. Like, I think they put it down on the score sheet as the Moroccan player scored an own goal at whatever minute, which is disappointing because Adekubi is a Calgary kid, and we love him dearly here in Calgary, and we're cheering for him and his family at this World Cup for sure. But I don't think he actually gets credit, which I think is a bit silly because the ball doesn't go in if he doesn't kick it. But at the same time, I get it. So, yeah, I don't think we celebrate it quite as much as we do, say, Alfonso's goal.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Think about in hockey, you know, if the defenseman scores on the goalie, the goal goes to the forward who last touched the puck.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm with you. Like, at some point, the puck had to be shot, which was then redirected by his own defender. But someone still gets – the puck did not just magically hit the defender and go in.
No.
Like, the only way it would make sense, right, if the keeper kicked it, and it went off the defender back into his hand. I'm like, okay, I guess that's fair. Therefore, the other team should not get the goal. But you're right. That should be a goal for us. But regardless, hey, man, Canada back in the World Cup. It was great to see. And I'm just happy we were all able to be on the world stage. Like, it's, you know, I know it sounds like a cliche, but it's an honor to be nominated. We're not a soccer nation. You know, we're 35 million people. It's pretty tough to be able to crack the top 64 in the world, especially when, for all intents and purposes, we're a cold weather country. So I'm like, the fact that we're able to do this and to make make the appearance, I'm happy with it. And like I said, Davey's got that goal, makes up for missing the penalty. Still a good showing by our boys.
Yeah, it feels kind of bittersweet. That's kind of how I described it. And it feels like, because at the same time, you're right, it's great that history got done. I would have loved to see them pick up their first points and pick up a win. That was the only thing I felt that was missing. I didn't feel bad that they didn't qualify or didn't get through their group. I understood from, you know, all my reading and everything heading in, that was going to be a long shot for them. But it was good to get some of the monkeys off of their back. I think it was good to get a taste of what it's going to be like in 2026. But at the same time, I think it's also a stark reminder, Verk, of how good this Canadian team is and the best men's team we've ever seen. But you sit there and go, wow, are they still, you know, got a lot of work to do in the next couple of years if they want to take that next step? Because the rest of the world really does produce some incredible soccer talent.
Without question. And, you know, we saw it with basketball. You know, for years, Canadian men's basketball was just a wasteland, right? We couldn't get anybody. And now, so you see this young influx of talent. Although the key there is that you've got to get guys that are committed to the program, willing to play. And it's hard, right? Because they're playing with the NBA. So maybe Andrew Wiggins or, Kelly Olynyk doesn't want to play at the Olympics. I'm not saying those guys are or not. I'm just saying, you know, it's not always a certainty that guys are going to be able to do it. Other issues come up, injuries, et cetera. So in terms of soccer, it's like, you know, Davey's choosing to play for us means something. It's very meaningful if this guy's committed and devoted. And anybody who tries to criticize Canada soccer and say, well, you know, they go there and they couldn't even get a win, I'm like, you're not paying enough attention. Like, you don't know how hard this is compared to the rest of the world, what Canada's funding is, just being able to grab these players. So I'm with you. Every journey begins with a single step. And for Canada, this is a pretty good step. We should all be proud of our boys and a good showing in Qatar.
Has it raised your expectations and excitement level for 2026 when we'll co-host with the United States and Mexico? Has it gotten you a little bit more excited for that in a couple years now?
Without question. Because I think if it's on home soil, there's always some added interest. I'd say by about 25 to 30% at least, people are looking around going, hey, oh, we're the host country? Okay, well, maybe I'll pay a little more attention now. Like, you're going to have the soccer diehards, regardless. You have the casual sports fans who say, I'm not a huge soccer fan, but I watch the World Cup. That's like me. And then you got those who say, you know what, hey, I'm just patriotic. I want to support what's going on. And hey, I didn't know, Canada's playing. Let me just go check out a few matches and see how we're doing. So I think, you know, no matter what, when the Maple Leaf is flying strong, people want to pay attention. But I'm with you that there's added value when it's on your home soil. And listen, if you look at the Winter Olympics, there's a reason why people still talk about 88 in Calgary in 2010 owning the podium. You know, Canada's had other strong showings, but it's already more meaningful when it's on home soil. And like I said, the fact that we're co-hosting it with U.S. and Mexico, I don't know how many people actually realize that. So, it's going to be fun because at least we'll have more invested. The fact is, like I said, on home soil.
Okay, you got to be honest with me now. And I know this is a tough spot to put you in on the radio, but I've asked friends this who have, you know, sort of been the same interest level that I have heading into this, and that's that I'm a very casual soccer observer, but I watched and made sure I watched every game of Canada in the World Cup here this time. What's your interest level for the World Cup going forward now that Canada's out?
That's a great question. Here's the thing. I've at least got some other investment. My mom moved from Pakistan to England when she was 10. So she grew up in England for like, you know, 10, 15 years. And all my cousins are still there. So I always have a strong rooting interest in England. So normally Canada's not in it. I just cheer for England. Now, my dad actually went to college in Germany, university in Göttingen. So he always roots for the Germans. So I'm like, all right. So normally going in, I always feel like I got a little Germany. I got a little bit of England. And now, of course, having lived in America for 12 years, I should be cheering for the red, white, and blue here as well. So I would say I have interest in those three squads. But your overarching point, if someone's texting me, hey, round of 16, I don't even know who's in it right now, but you said Senegal, France. I'm like, yeah, I'm probably not going to be watching that. So to your point, it's got to be championship match or semifinals or like a Titan matchup, right? Like if it's France and Germany or Germany-England or Brazil and England, like, okay, though that's massive. Like, I'm aware of the fact those countries are living and dying with soccer. Like, that's going to be awesome. But if it was, and again, I don't even know who the teams are in, but if it's like, you know, Tunisia, I'm like, eh, probably not interested on a Wednesday afternoon. Like, it's going to be honest.
I want to talk some hockey and some baseball while I've got you here, Virk. And your Flyers finally picked up a win, ended that long losing streak, but it comes with more bad news that Ryan Ellis won't play again this season. Tough spot for the Flyers to be in. You bring in John Tortorella, who I don't know knows how to lose or to, you know, even have that mentality instilled in his guys. But at the same point, it feels like this organization needs a pretty hard reset, and a high draft pick might be the better outcome this season.
You nailed it. You couldn't have said it better, Logo. I looked at the start of the year and I said, Tortorella's a year too early. Like, I wish we could tell him, hey, you know what, we want you, but just give us a year. Because we're going to just be horrible this year and try to get Connor Bedard and a high draft pick no matter what. And then you come in and make it happen. Because ultimately, this Flyers team is not good enough to make the playoffs. But they're not terrible enough because of Tortorella to truly be in line for number one pick. So they're in that horrible no man's land of going to be 10th in the Eastern Conference. You go, hey, they're not good enough. Like, they won their first three games. They won 5 of 7. But as you mentioned, they had a 10-game winless skid. Like, they're not going anywhere. And it's amazing. I watched that game, which was here in the States on ESPN Plus and Hulu. And I'm like, I'm just amazed we can score any goals. Like, there's just no jam up front. Like, Couturier is obviously out. Van Riemsdyk's out. Konechny's out. Ellis was supposed to be such a linchpin for the defense. Hasn't played yet for the Flyers last year, this year. Like, it's crazy. If you get this guy, like, oh, Ryan Ellis, he could be a number one or number two defenseman. And he hasn't even touched the ice. Like, it's horrible. And again, injuries happen to all teams. That's no excuse. You should have other reinforcements. But I look up and down that lineup and go, wow, you're expecting a lot of Kevin Hayes and Owen Tippett and anybody that can actually score a few goals. So it has to be Carter Hart standing on his head, which is exactly what happened against the Islanders. He was tremendous. Late power play, I'm like, oh, my God, the Islanders are going to tie. But somehow Philly holds on for the victory. So they're going to have to grind out these kind of wins. And Tortorella is too good a coach, as you mentioned, to let them lose. He's got way too much pride. Even if somebody whispered to him, if Chuck Fletcher said, hey, just so you know, like, we're not necessarily trying to win this year. He'd be like, I don't care. Like, I'm trying to win. I'm trying to win every single game. And he's just so entertaining as well. God, for the media. His line about Morgan Frost the other day, his play is like a toilet. His play has been more up and down than a toilet seat. That's got to be one of the funniest lines of the year. I'm surprised no one's ever used that analogy before, but it's hysterical. So let's hope Morgan Frost's game doesn't completely go in the crapper and it's more up than down.
And on the other side tonight, Flyers taking on the Tampa Bay Lightning. And very curious for your opinion on this, Adnan, because a very interesting situation earlier this week with Tampa Bay Lightning forward Pat Maroon in that game against the Boston Bruins. And look, Jack Edwards is a longtime NHL broadcaster. He's very much, you know, been on the home side of things when it comes to the Boston Bruins, and you can love it or you can hate it. And I know Bruins fans love him and will always appreciate the broadcasting side that's on the home team. But the comments he makes about Pat Maroon and then Maroon's response later on Twitter to, you know, make a donation in the name of mental health and Jack Edwards for people in Tampa Bay. I'm curious from a guy that calls games and that has been in that spot before, maybe not in that exact spot, Ed, but how you look at that from a professionalism side of view and the fact that Edwards hasn't come out and really said anything since that happened.
it makes me think of Joe Buck, who's one of my favorite broadcasters, and he's often asked advice he got from his father, Jack Buck, the legendary Hall of Famer. And he said Jack once told him, he used to always call Joe Buck, he'd call him by his last name, he'd go, Buck, you know, this game's a hard game. If you're going to criticize guys, you better make sure that you can do it better than them. And it's really good advice. Like, unless you think you're better than Pat Maroon, you got to be careful how you criticize somebody. Now, if a guy is a high-salary player, he's not giving a strong effort level, everyone seems to be on the same page about that, there's nothing wrong with criticizing the guy. And I think oftentimes the best broadcasters are the ones that do so. Having said that, you're in a better seat if it's the analyst doing it rather than the player. On Sunday Night Football, if Chris Collinsworth criticizes an O-lineman for letting the defensive end go past him, you're like, all right, well, Chris Collinsworth played football. I get it. If Mike Tirico does it, it doesn't come across as quite the same way because, like, well, what have you ever done? Which, again, whether rightly or wrongly, that's the approach sports fans are going to have. So in this instance, I'm like, I'm with you. I think Jack Edwards is a terrific broadcaster. He's got great energy. People love him. Boston, smart guy, former ESPN guy. But if you're going to start criticizing a guy's weight, like, that's a pretty personal attack. Like, it's funny. When someone said to me, did you hear who Jack Edwards criticized about his weight? Not being facetious, I said, who, Phil Kessel? Like, I had to think of a guy who's, like, a little bit chubby. And by the way, Phil Kessel's an Iron Man, so anybody tries to criticize him in his body, well, guess what? I'm going to be in the Iron Man at the NHL. So, you know, it all comes in different shapes and sizes, and guys can still get things done. Again, if it was a player who's known to be in great condition and has now ballooned and is playing at a particularly poor level, I think it's fair to say, hey, his conditioning doesn't look up to snuff. I think it's okay to make that comment. But for Jack, like, oh, my God, what's this guy eating? Like, I just think the tone in which he took was poor, and it was inappropriate. And credit to Pat Maroon, because, of course, a lot of guys would just go on Twitter and fire back at him and make insults about Jack. And, oh, look at your head and your hair, whatever. You never played hockey at my level. But I thought it was a pretty savvy move by him to go, you know what, I'll take the high road. I'll make a donation towards mental health and show that, you know, I'm caring and supportive of others. And it's a pretty class move by him. Like, he gets trolled by Edwards, and he ends up taking the high road and still coming out of this looking pretty good.
Yeah, better man than me for doing that, because I gave Pat Maroon a lot of credit, because it's one thing, you're right, it's so easy for him to go on there and, from his perspective, you know, take a shot at Jack Edwards, but to turn it into a positive takes a really big heart, and it seems like a guy that Pat Maroon really is. So great to see that. And we're chatting with our pal Adnan Burke, MLB Network, NHL Network, and, of course, the Cinephile podcast. Blue Jays haven't had much news lately. We've talked about, you know, some of the guys that they've been in and around the last couple of weeks, Virk, but they do make a piece of news this week, and it's Don Mattingly, the former Miami Marlins manager, who will become the team's bench boss and join John Schneider's staff. I guess just your initial thoughts when you heard that one coming down. 61 years old for Mattingly now, and he spent the last 7 years in Miami as their skippers after 5 years with the Dodgers.
Well, Miami to Toronto, that's the reverse of what most 61-year-olds are doing.
I believe so, yes. Baseball. That's the exact opposite of the retirement scale.
Exactly. I'm not going to be a snowbird. I'm going towards the snow. Good for you, Donnie Baseball. But I was surprised, and pleasantly surprised. Surprised in that he spent 7 years at the Marlins and never really had the resources to be a real contender, was able to get the most out of his team as possible, won Manager of the Year in 2020. But you kind of felt like this team is what it is, and I don't think it's Mattingly's fault. It's just, unless they really start investing in some bats specifically, they got great pitchers led by Alcantara, the Cy Young Award winner, they're not going to really be making an impact, especially in that division. The Phillies are going to sign one of these big free agent shortstops. The Mets have more money than anybody, and the Atlanta Braves won the World Series 2 years ago. So good luck dealing with all that competition right now and what a challenge that's going to be. So for Donnie Baseball, you're all right. He's clearly a good man, was a great player, borderline Hall of Famer, and he's a good manager. I would have thought he'd at least take the year off and then survey the landscape and look at the best job. But I'm pleasantly surprised he's willing to sublimate his ego a little bit and say, you know what, I don't want to be the manager. I'll be the bench boss. Like, I can come in there and give guidance and veteran leadership. And Toronto's lineup really kind of fits in with what Don Mattingly, kind of his hitting philosophy is. You know, if you look at their numbers as far as hitting home runs and trying to limit strikeouts and work more, you know, base on balls, like, he'll work on all that kind of stuff. And just because he's a hitter doesn't mean he can't help the pitching staff as well. And more than anything, he will be that firm hand for John Schneider. Now, here's where it gets interesting. Schneider, our friend John Morosi tweeted, grew up a Yankees fan in Jersey, and it's one of his favorite players is Don Mattingly. It's one thing to idolize a guy. It's now another thing to be in the room. And I was with Chris Young yesterday and Jake Peavy, two terrific players, and they said to me, we have been on teams where there's a clear disconnect between the bench coach and the manager. I think the specific example they gave me was A.J. Hinch as the manager and Kirk Gibson as the bench coach.
And I said, you know, Gibby was being groomed to be the next manager. So he wanted to have his input being said. He wasn't going to be quiet about sharing his opinion. At the end of the day, A.J. Hinch is the manager. Now, I don't think Mattingly, anyone's ever confused him with being volatile or difficult. I think he'll simply give his opinion, and John Schneider will take it for what it's worth. But you've got to think about this. Toronto's looking to win. They finally made the playoffs. There's going to be no excuses if they don't make the playoffs. If, God forbid, they have a 10-game winless stretch, you don't believe John Schneider's looking over his shoulder going, how long till I get fired and Don Mattingly's the guy? Like, Schneider took over for Charlie Montoyo, who wasn't able to get the job done. Schneider was able to get them to the playoffs. Absolutely. But now I have to think to myself, it's a really curious situation to watch, because my first thought is, when there's a veteran bench coach who's truly capable of being a manager, how long until he becomes the manager of the team? You almost feel like in some ways it's dead man walking. I hope that isn't the case. I hope Schneider does a great job and they coexist, but it's something that we'll certainly keep an eye on.
Blue Jays GM Ross Atkins was speaking to the media in Toronto today and said that he expects some news coming out of the winter meetings. I assume you and your colleagues at MLB Network are gearing up for a busy next couple of weeks of baseball news, eh?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I got the trip to go to San Diego. The rest of the fellas are all boasting about that. We'll be heading out there on Saturday, and they'll be there Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. And it's interesting because winter meetings, there's always some action. Now, I think in the past, you'd get a bunch of whoppers of trades and moves, and now you'll definitely get some movement. But what's happened is that these guys are in such good shape now, Logo. Like, they don't have to sign right away. There's a feeling now, but hurry up and wait. And, you know, I can wait until middle of February. Like, once spring training opens, I'll find the right team. I'm already in shape. I'll meet the fellows, and away we go. Whereas in the past, guys wanted to get signed in December. Hey, a couple months to get acclimated, talk to the team, get loose, get ready, and away we go. So it depends on that person's approach. Like, I think for Aaron Judge, the Yankees have now offered him 8 years and $300 million. Like, that, it's pretty wise the Yankees put that out there, because now if he says no, a Yankee fan can say, really? Like, dude, you said you wanted to be a Yankee. This is where you wanted to be. You've been with us since 2017. You're Rookie of the Year, the MVP. Like, what more do you want? That's not good enough. So the Dodgers give you, let's say, $320. The $20 million, you're going to leave the New York Yankees. So the Judge is the one that I'm most keeping an eye on. The fact that the Yankees kind of floated those numbers out there. And by the way, they're willing to move on the $300. It could go to $320. And all along, I have said he wants to be able to say, I'm the highest paid player on the team. Gerrit Cole makes $324. I want $325. Maybe that's not important to him, but I feel like all these guys have egos. And at least the agent will be talking to the house number in his ear. Hey, my guy's got to be the number one paid guy. So, of course, winter meetings, you always expect a flurry of activity. But Judge is the biggest name out there. We now know the numbers, at least what the Yankees are offering. We'll see if the Giants or Dodgers can pony up. But a lot of talk about Trey Turner, and the Phillies are really kicking the tires here on Trey Turner. When it's all said and done, he might be the best player available in free agency. Like, Judge is obviously a ruthless slugger and amazing. But if you look at the duration of the contract, Judge is going to sign for 7 or 8 years, and Turner's going to sign for 7 or 8 years. A lot of people are saying Trey Turner is going to be the better player and put up the better numbers over that time. So he's going to be getting in excess of $200 million. Feels like Phillies or Cardinals, the favorites right now to land Trey.
And last but not least, Quentin Tarantino, a celebrated contemporary filmmaker that will be remembered for generations. What do you make of Quentin Tarantino, the author? I know you talked about his new book on Cinephile this week.
Yeah, I gave a book review on Cinephile, and I loved it. It was, 370 pages, and it was really entertaining because it truly is Tarantino's voice. I mean, I don't listen to audiobooks. I like to actually read the book, but I imagine listening to it. I mean, he talks faster than I do, and he's got such great energy, and he's got an encyclopedic knowledge of movies, and he focuses on the 70s and the era that he loves, and unsurprisingly, the movies he loves, he's not talking about, you know, The Godfather or Jaws or movies that you and I might know as major movies in the 70s. He focuses on the so-called B-movies, genre movies, as he calls them, revenge-o-matics. You know, Charles Bronson and Death Wish and all those blaxploitation films. And he's also as big a fan as I am of Taxi Driver. So the one thing that comes across is Tarantino was being taken by his mom, single mom, dating a bunch of guys, oftentimes black guys, oftentimes athletes, taking the movies very inappropriate for his age group, but he would sit there and soak it all up. And at 10 or 11 years old, he became a cinephile because he was watching everything. And again, this is long before home video and DVD and streaming and all the rest of it. So the only time to see a movie was to go to the movies. And he seemingly was going all the time. And all those movies were captured in his imagination, were able to come out of him in his incredible work. So I love the book. It really is a book for movie lovers. As much as I know about movies, Logan, trust me, there was chapters and names of movies that I had never heard of. So he really goes next level in the stuff that he's into and the stuff that I also love, like Brian De Palma movies and stuff like that. It was really, really good stuff by QT.
I can't wait to read it. I really liked your review of it, and I'm going to put it on the Christmas list and see if I can't knock it out over the holidays. Virk, you're the best. Always appreciate the time, pal. Have a great weekend. We'll chat with you next week, hey?
You too, Logo. Take care of that great crew around you as well. Love those guys.
Take care, buddy. There you go. Adnan Virk, our MLB NHL Network pal. He's also the host of the Cinephile podcast, joining us down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. It's a Flames game day. We got to get out of here. The Hockey PDO cast with Dmitry Filipovich is coming up next. Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg starts at 4 this afternoon. All of it on your home of the Flames, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.